Welcome to Cannabis Health Radio, a podcast where we share stories from people around the world who are using cannabis as medicine. The information is meant to raise awareness about the health benefits of cannabis, but should not be taken as medical advice. Now, here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
Right off the top, I want to give a shout out to folks to share Cannabis Health Radio's podcast because Facebook is shadow blocking us and, Corey, other cannabis sites.
Yes.
And those people who have us on their newsfeed, and we have 27,000 followers on Cannabis Health Radio's newsfeed, aren't getting some of our podcasts, aren't getting some of our posts and the activity on Facebook and the activity on our website, cannabishealthradio.com, has dropped off dramatically as a result because a lot of people wait until we post our podcast on Facebook, then they listen to it. And so we'd encourage people to share it with their friends on their social media platforms, and we'd greatly appreciate it. Thanks very much. Now, today, Burkitt lymphoma is where cancer starts in immune cells, affecting three times more men than women, and it often spreads to the brain or spinal cord. And recognized as a fast-growing human tumor, Burkitt lymphoma is associated with impaired immunity and is rapidly fatal if left untreated. And joining us today to talk about his father's diagnosis with Burkitt lymphoma is Andrew, who is with us in studio. So he lives here in Canada, of course. And Andrew does not want us to use his last name, and we always appreciate that from folks who don't want us to use their last name, and we respect that. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Now,
welcome.
Tell us how your father found out he had Burkitt's.
Okay. So for a few months, he was complaining about back pain. Mm-hmm. And he's had that his whole life, like anyone does. Every once in a while, you get pain in your shoulder, you go to the massage therapist, and they work it out for you. You start stretching, you just look after yourself. But this wasn't going away. Eventually, he started seeing a physiotherapist and working with them, I think, once a week. After a few months, the pain developed to the point where it was excruciating. It left him bedridden. He couldn't get up. We were just constantly giving him cannabis to try and manage the pain because he couldn't get off the bed. My oldest brother takes him in to see the physiotherapist, and right away my dad has to tell him, you know, I've got this pain, but it also makes me feel like I have to go to the washroom all the time and I can't. Mm-hmm. And the physiotherapist says, okay, just stop what you're doing, go to the emergency room right now. By the time my dad gets there, they have to sedate him because the pain's too much. Mm-hmm. And they put him into an MRI machine, I think, right away. And they discover there's a 6-inch tumor in his spine. Mm-hmm. And they don't wake him up. They just go to my brother, say, sign this form. We got to do surgery on him.
Wow.
They do emergency back surgery on him.
How old was your dad then?
54.
Mm.
Yeah. So relatively young.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So it was quite the shock for him to wake up, you know, on a cocktail of drugs in a hospital room, wondering what the heck's going on. You're just emotional from the drugs, mm-hmm. let alone, oh, okay, I'm in a hospital. What happened? Can't really remember the past day's events. And then to be told, hey, you went into emergency surgery. We found a tumor in your spine.
Mm-hmm. Were they able to get all the tumor?
No, not all of it. Mm-hmm. The doctor had to make a decision during the surgery if it was possibly cancerous, and if it was, if chemotherapy would be able to get rid of it. If he didn't think that, there was a big risk of him paralyzing my dad.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. And during the surgery, he nicked a nerve, and I think that caused some damage, but he left some of it in there.
Mm-hmm.
A few weeks later, biopsy comes back. It's non-Hodgkin's Burkitt's lymphoma. Yeah.
So how was he after the surgery?
emotional. I'm sure he's a ton of different things. Scared, worried about his kids and his family. On a cocktail of drugs.
Yeah, probably in shock because he probably wasn't prepared for a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, especially at 54.
Yeah.
Yeah, just emotional, not sure how to take it. And then you're on all these drugs to deal with the pain because you went through emergency back surgery. I think the doctors didn't expect him to walk for weeks after that. And the next morning he's walking.
Mm-hmm. Wow. When you were speaking earlier, you said when he was experiencing all this pain before he actually ended up in hospital, you were giving him cannabis for the pain. In what form were you doing that?
I think at that time it was mostly oral, like with capsules.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just basically cannabis ground up into capsules or actually in oil form?
In oil form.
In oil form, okay.
Yeah.
So when he was recovering, you were still giving him cannabis and he was taking this cocktail of chemo.
Yeah. Right? So because Burkitt's lymphoma is quite an aggressive form of cancer, one that can scare people right away, being told you have an aggressive form of cancer. Mm-hmm. But it also means it's treatable as well. Yeah. But you have to use an aggressive cocktail of chemo. I believe the most in one round he received was 23 different types of chemotherapy. The longest he'd received chemotherapy in one setting was for 23 hours straight.
Wow. Holy crap.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Did they give him, was one of the combos they gave him called R-CHOP?
I don't remember.
Oh, that's okay. It's fine.
Yeah.
Tell listeners what R-CHOP is.
Oh, sure. Okay.
It's a various combination. Yeah,
it's a five different types of chemo. I think rituximab is one. But don't quote me on that. But yeah, I read all you all the names the other day, and I couldn't pronounce them. Mm. I was sure you were going to ask, this is a trick question today. All the chemotherapy drugs are toxic, regardless. It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
So, that's incredible, though, for him to have chemotherapy for that long a time in one session.
23 hours.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. I believe he started chemo in October. And they said if he was still taking it by April, the chemo was going to kill him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he stopped chemo, I think, in February.
Okay. No, so he was doing...
2019?
No. This would have been 2016.
2016.
2017.
Okay. Was he doing oil all along through that then?
Yeah. Yeah. So at a certain point, he started taking 500 milligrams of THC every 4 hours to manage the pain. And he's told me and expressed to anyone he speaks to that without cannabis, he doesn't believe he'd be alive.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be the first time we've heard that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, there was nothing else that was helping him fall asleep or help with his appetite or, mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things we've heard a lot of people talk about when they've undergone chemo is that when they've undergone chemo with a number of other people and they've taken cannabis, they have responded better to the chemo than those people who haven't taken cannabis.
Mm-hmm. And I see that time and time again, too, with people who choose to do chemo. If they do it in conjunction with cannabis oil, they come through it far, far better.
Yeah,
by a country mile, not only in the severity of the side effects, but also in how effective the chemo is. And I've seen that time and time and time again. You know, so and chemo, you know, as we've discussed before, is a real, real personal choice. You know, but if you know, I guess the bottom line from me is, if you're going to do it, make sure you do cannabis oil with it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
What are some of the repercussions that he's had as a result of taking chemo?
Well, there's just going through the whole process. I mean, I think he describes it as leaving him mentally and physically shattered, are his words. Mm-hmm. He talks about at one point he had to have a conversation with himself and sort of detach his mind from his body. He couldn't trust his body anymore. He had to separate the two. He couldn't trust his body to go through what he was going through with that much chemotherapy. He had to separate that. To rebuild that connection afterwards is quite the challenge. I mean, afterwards, he's dealing with all sorts of things, and that's a whole other half of the battle, I believe. A lot of people don't necessarily speak of the psychological effects. Even survivor's guilt. I mean, he was in the hospital with people that are 23. They're young people relative to him, and he's wondering, hey, why did they have to go? You form a special bond with that person.
Yeah. Tell us the story, because your dad lives in a different part of the country. Tell us the story about him coming out here to the West Coast.
Yeah, so when he came to visit me the first time afterwards, his mobility is not the greatest. He at that point, he can't really feel his legs. They sort of feel like clubs, as he described them, just swinging these clubs. He was afraid of people to touch his back. At one point, he was in my apartment, and I came up behind him and just placed my hand on his back, and he started screaming. I'm wondering, oh, what did I just do? What the heck? And he tells me, no, when you touch my back, you have to really hit me, because my body can't sense that, and it feels like I'm getting stabbed. So you have to, like, shove him, hit him quite hard in order for him to register. And I was just doing that so he knew I was behind him. One day I decided to take him to the Willows Beach because he didn't believe me. There was a sandy beach on the West Coast. Yeah, he just thinks, yeah.
Just a bunch of rocks.
Yeah, exactly. And we get there and he's just gobsmacked. He's like, I can't believe it. We decided to take off our socks and shoes. And as soon as he steps on the sand, he starts screaming again. He has to get off the sand right away. Same thing.
Peripheral neuropathy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He starts.
It's nasty.
Yeah. He feels like his feet are getting stabbed. Yeah.
Wow.
Does he continue to take cannabis?
Yep. Yep. I should ask him how regularly it is. But initially, right after going through treatment, it was very regular. You need a whole toolbox to get through this, not just chemo, not just cannabis. You need a
diet,
lifestyle, yoga, and seeing counselors. You need support from your friends and family.
A holistic approach, mind, body, spirit.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to continue that afterwards too. You're living in fear. Oh, is this going to come back?
Every little thing is like, ooh.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. And they don't really, it's like, this is a weird analogy, but it's like having a kid. They sort of just give you the baby and kick you out of the hospital.
Good luck.
Yeah. Same thing when you're done going through this.
Yeah.
Okay. Good luck. See ya.
It's all about the immediate. Like when you're going for treatment, you know, as I've often talked about, you're told you're going to throw up and you're going to lose your hair, et cetera, et cetera. But they don't talk about it being the gift that keeps on giving, and there's going to be all of these peripheral things that are going to happen, you know, the brain fog or commonly known as chemo brain, et cetera. I know that I've worked with a number of people who have suffered from chemo brain and peripheral neuropathy, and we've had a number of people who have successfully recovered, if not completely, at least partially, from their peripheral neuropathy, treating it with high THC. So maybe something to explore.
Yeah. Well, I know it's gotten significantly better, and he's taken things like turkey tail mushrooms as well.
Oh, yeah. They're great. Yeah. Mark Bartlett, if you're listening, you're the turkey tail mushroom guy.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's always promoting turkey tail.
So he's getting better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incrementally better each month or every several months.
Yeah, slowly and surely. I mean, life goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've heard this saying before, and I might have even heard this from my dad. The two most intimate time periods in someone's life is when you're born and when you're passing away.
Yeah.
So to face that and then have to continue with life, there's a whole rebuilding that one has to go through.
Well, it's a form of PTSD, isn't it? Everything that you go through.
Oh, yeah. Well, to be perfectly honest, like chemotherapy, you're just poisoning yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is going to die first, the cancer or you.
Yeah.
It's not something you want to wish on anyone.
Yeah.
It's traumatic just to even hear someone's going through it if you understand what they're about to go through.
You know, it's interesting because I was just thinking about this just the past couple of days, and I don't know why, but just even what it would be like to get in the car and start driving over to your local cancer center, knowing you're going to go there and have all this poison dumped into your system that's going to wreak havoc on your body and make you incredibly ill in hopes of making you better.
Yeah.
While it destroys everything else in your system.
That's right.
You know, and just even what that feels like. Well, you know?
I think for a lot of people, they're going to be in shock, but if they're not aware exactly of what they're going to go through, they're just going to be numb and in shock, and fortunately, they're not fully aware. If you've been through it...
Yeah. And then there are the people with the make-me-better mentality, where they basically just turn themselves over to the system and...
Yeah.
You know.
What's the most difficult part for them? Is it the physical part or the mental-emotional part?
Oh, that's a good question. I would really have to ask him. It's probably a combination of the two. You know, physically, still at a relatively young age, being limited to what he can do.
Yeah. And there's also the fear in the back of his mind that if he gets a pain in the back,
yeah,
God, is this coming back?
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're living in the fight or flight.
All the time.
Yeah.
And the cannabis is the only thing that can really relieve that sort of stress on his mental and emotional being.
Yeah, yeah. You need it as a tool to help have a healthy mindset, a positive outlook. Mm-hmm. And without that, you're not going to have a good direction to go down.
No. So when he was actually going through the chemo, et cetera, and he was taking oil, did he do it like 3 times a day or?
Well, he's told me it was every 4 hours, most every 5 hours.
Okay, well, that's good.
I think he really just took it whenever he felt like, I need this. Mm-hmm. And he figured out, I need this an hour from now. I need to take it now.
Now, yeah. So it's sounds like you guys at some level almost had a head start in that you were familiar with oil, at least, and cannabis and its medicinal properties before you actually entered this journey.
Yeah, well, that's the benefit of, unbeknownst to me, growing up in a cannabis family.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And your family was totally supportive of this?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
They took turns growing the plants.
Yeah.
100%. Very quickly, we spoke to the hospital and said, hey, we need to have cannabis here. And initially, they were a little concerned and going, okay, what? How are you going to keep this? Do you have a medical document? Do you have a prescription?
Right.
We didn't right away. We were able to get him one, but they gave us a little safe to keep in his hospital room where he kept all of his cannabis. And
well, fabulous that you could be, because keep in mind, we're going back a few years now. It wasn't legal in Canada.
This was before legalization.
Yeah.
And so fabulous that you could have that there at the hospital and be open enough with his medical team for them to know that he was doing that. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I think you have to be very honest with your medical team when you're going through that. You have to tell them everything you're taking.
Yeah.
And I think they looked at us and said, this is something we're not going to fight this family on. He's taking cannabis.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, I deal with a lot of people in the States, and it's a different story down there. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to patient after patient who's been dropped like a hot potato when they say they're doing cannabis. So down there, I always say, if you're not sure of how the reaction you're going to get, err on the side of caution and don't say anything until it's all said and done.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But really, how refreshing to hear your story. And hopefully that's the trend in the future, is that we can all just be open.
Yeah. Well, I think at one point, if we didn't get him a medical document from a physician, they probably would have had a conversation and said, you can't keep this here. Mm-hmm. We would have just had to bring it in daily for him or figure something out. Yeah, we're well, fortunate.
Yeah, we interviewed a few years ago Phil James in the UK, yes. who died recently.
Yes.
He was only 31, I think, yeah. when he died. 31, yeah. in his early 30s. But he had brain cancer. He used cannabis to get rid of it. Then it came back, and he had trouble accessing it when he was in the hospital. They wouldn't yeah. allow it in. And yeah. as a result, he died. Wow. Died this year, I think.
Yeah, very recently, in the past couple of months.
Yeah.
Yeah, very wow. sad.
Yeah, that's tragic. It's so frustrating to see the different states of the world and where they're at with cannabis. We're very fortunate where we're at in Canada. I mean, there's still a long ways to go with it. But talk about an injustice.
Yeah, well, and in places it's going backwards. I just did an hour-long interview with for a journalist out of Sweden. And mm-hmm. Sweden has gone backwards. Sweden has now made CBD illegal.
So well, it doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't make sense. So they're not moving forward at all. She said it's like they're in a bubble there. It's just crazy. And yet, generally, you kind of think of places like Switzerland, Sweden, et cetera, as being a little ahead of us in mm-hmm. what they're doing.
Yeah.
But not so much.
Interesting. One of the questions that Corey and we get emails all the time is when people have cancer, they want to know what the best CBD product to take.
Oh, right, right.
And you've been a grower for a number of years.
Yep.
And Corey shakes her head every time she gets that question.
Because I dealt with this at 6 o'clock this morning. What's the best CBD for lung cancer?
Yeah.
Well, that drives me nuts. People are too afraid of THC.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Yeah. It's become almost underappreciated cannabinoid. It's medical.
Most feared. And
Yeah. And there's nothing to fear from it.
No. You know, Andrew, I can't even tell you how many people that I've lost because, or know of, that have died because they thought CBD was what they needed to, quote unquote, cure cancer. Yeah. And the misinformation out there is crazy. And I'm always really clear with people. It's THC that kills the cancer. Mm-hmm. CBD alone does not kill mm-hmm. cancer, mm-hmm. period. CBD can be great.
Yeah.
Anti-inflammatory, those arthritis people, oh my good God. PTSD, seizures, yeah. you know, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think with my dad at the time, I was just like, I don't care what it is, just get him in it and get it in him.
Yeah.
Any type of cannabis or cannabinoids.
Yeah.
Just get it in.
Well, and this is it too, you know, we're becoming increasingly aware that it's not just about THC for cancer, you know, CBD mm-hmm. or CBN is showing great promise with lung cancer. And, you know, when people are getting into these isolates, I'm like, my vein of thinking is this. God, Mother Nature, whoever, whatever your belief system, did not create this plant with all the cannabinoids in it for it to all be separated out. Mm-hmm. We're all there together for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, the entourage.
The entourage effect.
Yeah. You know? I was just going to say, even a little THC with CBD makes the CBD more effective.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you raise a very good point, but don't be afraid of THC, because Corey has a fascinating story that Bob Melamed told her about a friend of his who took
40 grams at one time.
Because he was,
He had Kaposi sarcoma.
Right.
And I think he'd been off of it for a while. He had a girlfriend who didn't want to do it, didn't want him doing cannabis or something. Bob looked at him and said, you're going to be dead in 6 months if you don't do something. And he went home and took 40 grams all at one time. 40 or 50? It was 50.
Was it 50?
50 grams. And I said to Bob, you know, wow, what was he like? And Bob said, I was unable to communicate effectively with him for quite some time. but as Bob said, as you see, you can't die from this, right? And I guess he stumbled to the doctor a month later and he was fine.
He was fine, yeah.
He was absolutely fine.
Let me, wait a second. 40 or 50 grams
of oil.
Okay, of oil.
Yeah.
High THC oil.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you meant instead of milligrams, it was 50 grams of THC?
Grams. Yeah.
Oh grams.
He slept for a while.
Yeah.
Like we're talking 10 5 mil syringes. Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But he was fine after.
He was fine.
Yeah,
a couple of months.
And you know, I'm always very clear with people: you cannot die from this. You're not going to overdose on this. Yeah. You know, you might sleep for a week.
Yeah,
but you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and people need to get over that. And they might be a little anxious or get really hungry or laugh or mm-hmm. just fall asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a misconception out there to be afraid of it, and CBD is mm-hmm. the answer. And mm-hmm. I think CBD was just trending, and it's had its moment, and it's going to stick around.
Yeah.
It's a good way to introduce people who are afraid of cannabis mm-hmm. and show them, hey, what you've been lied to essentially your whole life. Cannabis isn't bad for you.
It strikes me as very strange that people are willing to go on experimental pharmaceutical drugs that show absolutely no promise. They have no idea what the effects are going to be. They're willing to take that, but they're not willing to take cannabis.
Blindly take it.
Blindly. They're willing to take fentanyl.
Here we go. Yes. Yeah. Remember that lady? Yeah.
Yeah. So willing to take fentanyl. Oh, I can't take.
She wanted her husband safe drugs.
What's safe drugs?
Drugs. Morphine, what was it? Morphine something and fentanyl.
Yeah.
Because they're safe drugs as opposed to cannabis.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be all sorts of reasons for that, but one has to be that we've put physicians or people in authority type roles, like a doctor, we go there trusting they have a more knowledge than us mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. certain aspects or on medicine, and we just blindly trust them. We don't stop to think, okay, have they looked into this? Do they know how dangerous fentanyl is?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's the issue, is that we do tend to have doctors on pedestals, and there's some awesome doctors out there.
Oh, yeah.
There's some absolute awesome doctors out there, but do they have the knowledge that we expect them to have? Not always. You know, it's like with the whole cannabis legalization in Canada, I think that some doctors are trying to be really progressive, and so they're sending people to places like Tilray, Aurora, where they're capped out on what they can produce in strengths of oil, and it's mm-hmm. not even remotely close to what you need to treat cancer or an aggressive disease of any kind. Mm-hmm. And I think they're doing it in all good faith, but they don't have that education, right? I mean, I have doctors sending patients to me because they don't have the knowledge, and from within Canada and overseas. So I think that it really, like all things, starts with education. And certainly, you know, Dr. Dave Hepburn, we've interviewed him a couple times mm-hmm. from Victoria, Dave Hepburn.
Yeah.
And he was saying last time he was in here that they're now starting to teach the endocannabinoid system in med school. So it's a start.
Yeah. Well, that's just the issue, though, is these physicians haven't been taught anything about cannabis mm-hmm. up until very recently.
Very recently.
And what they were taught was probably to stay away from it.
Negative. Well, so my own GP, I don't know if you know my story, but basically diagnosed in 2011 anal cancer, given 2 to 4 months to live, did oil, cleared mm-hmm. myself. No chemo, no radiation. But my doctor, when I first tried to tell him, covered his ears and went, la, 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 la. And my other doctor, they shared an office, mm-hmm. she told me it was against her religion. Now, doctor number one did a complete 180 once I cleared myself. Started looking into it, telling me how amazing cannabinoids were. Did I know how many people they killed each day with pharmaceuticals? You know, so sometimes it's just all about shining that light and letting them get some knowledge, you know?
Yeah. But for him to initially just cover his ears like that, like how ignorant you have to be.
Yes, you said it. I was just keeping quiet, but absolutely.
I've been fortunate enough to work with a few different physicians, and one of them said a good physician will sit there and be quiet for the first 15 minutes because the patient will tell you what's wrong with them and what they need.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And most physicians just go in there going, oh, I'll know what to tell you right away.
Yes.
And they don't want to listen to the patient. It's just get them in, get them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's the old saying, if you sit there and listen, you learn something. If you sit there and talk, all you're doing is giving information that you already know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the problem and the problem with the medical system today is not so much with the medical system, it's also with government. Government is the big problem. And government is as fearful of cannabis as the medical associations are.
Yeah, I was going to bring them up too. That's another issue. All these physicians are facing so much pressure and scrutiny.
Yeah.
If they have anything to do with cannabis, they'll be audited, have their license threatened, let alone government, like you said, the overregulation, and even adding a tax on medical cannabis for patients in Canada, making it more expensive.
More expensive, yeah. I don't know about you, but I feel like this whole legalization in Canada has done virtually nothing for medical patients.
Yeah, well, it's made it worse, and people have to stop using the term legalization. It's regulation, or over-regulation.
Regulation, that's right.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not legalization. That would make it free. It'd make it like growing a tomato plant. Mm-hmm. And that's not what it's like.
No.
It's fascinating to hear that your dad is improving. And Burkitt lymphoma, I knew nothing about it until you and I connected in that coffee shop that one day, and I had to look it up. And
I'd never heard of it.
Yeah, the fact that it affects three times more men than women, and it can go to your brain and your spine, which your dad obviously went to his spine.
Yeah.
That's why he had that 6-inch tumor. Yeah. Was it 6 inch or 6 centimeters?
6 inches.
6-inch
yeah.
tumor.
Oh, that's a massive tumor, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big tumor.
I wonder how long it had actually been going on. You know,
well, it's a very fast forming tumor.
It is. Okay.
Yeah. And it's predominantly, this type of cancer is found in children as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you told me the story. He went to Italy and went hiking and came back and it really hurt.
Oh, yeah. That's when he got bedridden. He went to Italy for a month and, you know, essentially just walked everywhere.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh my God, I'm destroying my back. And by the time he got home, he couldn't get out of bed. And the tumor had grown to press up against his bladder, which caused damage to his bladder and why he had that sensation of...
Always having to pee.
Yeah, and I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was getting spinal taps done. I think at least weekly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Andrew, it was a fascinating story, and we wish your dad the best, and it was good of you to come on and talk to us about it. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, what you guys do is extremely important. We have to have these conversations and get them out there for other people to hear. And I hope I did my dad justice. It's always difficult to speak on someone else's behalf.
Yeah, I thought you did very well.
I thought you did great. No. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys.
And we'd like to thank Ron Zahar, our producer, for donating his studio and his time, and we greatly appreciate it. And once again, we encourage all listeners to promote Cannabis Health Radio on their social media platforms and get the message out that cannabis is beneficial for your body. And we have a problem with Facebook shadow banning our podcasts and cannabis related sites.
Yeah, so people often will search for us and not be able to find us. It'll come up saying page not found.
That's right, page not found.
And we are found.
And we are found. We're still there. CannabisHealthRadio.com. We greatly appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks for listening to Cannabis Health Radio. For more information and to search previous podcasts, visit our website, CannabisHealthRadio.com. Subscribe so you don't miss new episodes. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by donations from our listeners. If you found the information helpful, please consider making a donation in any amount through our website. You can also help us share our message by leaving a review on your podcast listening platform. We are very grateful for your support. Thank you.